Hi, everybody. Such a day. I couldn't help myself. I had to post all the revelries in all of the places, London, Paris, New York, Chicago, Oh God. And like many other people, I was crying half the day. So here we are in a slightly altered state of consciousness. And that's a good place to be when we want to meditate and to consider what we can see and what we don't see and what about that. And then, of course, and then my printer jammed. And then I undid the, I fixed the jam, and then it said, you have to replace your printing cartridge too. So the page that I sent you, I don't have right in front of me at the moment, except on, I can pull it up on the screen. So it's that a little bit, that state of discombobulation. The moment. And it's okay. So let's let ourselves take a little bit of time. This koan is not easy. Necessarily, but it also doesn't have to be difficult. And so I can't remember whether I suggested this in the first place, but it's kind of good to let it flow over you. And I'm actually going to read two different translations, because there's something interesting that the translation I sent you is the one that Joan Sutherland and John Tarrant used and are putting in their translation of the Blue Cliff Record that's in progress. But the Cleary translation and the translation that is in the Book of Serenity, which also has this koan, are different. And I want us to let both translations kind of hang with us. And I have a couple of other things to say before we even do that. So let's just sit for a couple minutes, and then I'll say those couple things, and then we'll fall into the meditation, okay? I hope it's okay, because that's what we're doing. this morning, Susan Rogers, after our meditation, talked a little bit about ritual and sort of began an exploration of ritual. And so I noticed sitting these few minutes at the beginning, what a sweet ritual that is, that we allow ourselves and each other a little bit of time to arrive, a little bit of time to feel what it's like for me, for you, in this moment. What's the light like? What's the air like? And for those of us who can use incense, actually, you I'm sure know that the scent of incense is also part of arriving, that your whole body and being arrive in the smell as well as in the place in some way, and that it changes our experience, the sound of the bell. Leads us into meditation and is the meditation also. And there's something about acknowledging the sweetness of these rituals and the power of them that connects for me with what we're going to talk about today, because it has to do with that vast amount that we don't know about ourselves. And yet that that we can become wise about. How do you become wise about what you don't know anything about? And yet you do. And there's something interesting about that. And so a couple of things that have just come across my desk recently that are sort of tangential to this koan, but sort of not. And that's something I'd like to explore with you all. One was an article about acedia, which was a term used, I guess, first in England in 1607 to refer to a state, an emotional state that the desert monks would experience, that seemed to be connected to their isolation, a state of enforced isolation, being in their cells most of the time, constant uncertainty and a barrage of bad news. And it was a state that was characterized by listlessness, as though worn by a long journey, to be bored, listless, afraid, and uncertain all at once, bumbling around and not knowing what you're doing. And what caught my eye about that was, it's familiar to us in this time we're living in, and we're surprised by it, which has intrigued me because it reminds me that these odd behaviors that I see arising in this time from myself and from other people, have are a kind of connection to the time. They are a kind of connection to something bigger than me, and they are the response of me as a being. They're part of my responsiveness as a being of which I was unaware. And that's just kind of interesting. And the second, maybe even a little bit related, was articles that have been coming along about deception, about how people can manipulate knowledge, how people can manipulate how we see. And so there have been a lot of people exploring that topic for obvious reasons. And the question about how do you combat deception? How do you return a group of people to a clearer sense of how not to be duped? And that reminded me of Vimala Kirti, of Joan Sutherland's book about the Vimala Kirti Sutra, in which she talks about subverting duality, about how what we do, our way of encountering the moment, our way of practice, is subversive in that it allows us to get under to and turn our perception of experience and it allows us to have a kind of direct experience that dissolves categories. And it's not unrelated to compassion. And so there's something very interesting about how this is a leap too far probably, but I'm wondering what that has to do with how the heart sees. So I wanted to just sort of drop a couple of questions like that in, and because today's a day when I think many of us are sort of feeling as if we can, that something is cleared and we can stand on the bare ground. We can stand on the bare ground and say, where am I now? What do I offer here? And what is the way in which I can be helpful in subverting a subversive practice, a kind subversive practice of going under the dualities? Is this making any sense at all? I'm aware of being pretty abstract. But, and then the third thing is a sort of more minor thing, but also kind of interested me. There was an article by Van Jones about what we don't know about what happens between the vote counting and the time someone's inaugurated as president, that there are a whole lot of steps that usually just automatically happen because somebody concedes. But if somebody doesn't concede, then there are a whole bunch of other things that spin forward that happen. And again, it was just that awareness of, you know, I had no idea. And that the feeling of that. Of that, I had no idea. So I think those things, I see, as I said, are in a way peripheral, because that's not exactly the question we're looking at here, but it's not unrelated. Because I think in all this time of feeling we don't, can't see clearly, and we don't understand what, how somebody else is seeing, how could they not be seeing what I'm seeing? in a time like this, there is a deeper question about what does it mean if I can't see your non-seeing, or if you can't see my not seeing, or if I can't see my not seeing, then what's going on? Okay. So I'm going to read into the meditation just the translation that I sent you to start with, because that seems fair. Okay. So does anybody want to put some words in before I start the meditation? Enough words already? Okay, let's go. Let's not go. One layer we can peel off immediately is the layer that says seeing is good and not seeing is not so good. So I propose an experiment in our meditation. I think that for me, seeing is directional, has a direction to it. And not seeing doesn't have a direction to it necessarily. But let's see whether that agrees at all with your experience and mine right now. The Shurangama Sutra says, when I don't see, why don't I see the place of my not seeing? If I see the not seeing, then naturally it isn't an image that is going unseen. If I do not see the realm of my not seeing, then naturally this is not a something. Why isn't it you? Hakuin's commentary says, all things can be seen by the eyes, but not seeing is not a thing. It's not a green thing. It's not a red thing. Because it's not a thing, it must be your own awakened mind. Not seeing is not a thing. Because it is not a thing, It must be your own awakened mind. The realm that is not a thing is your true vision. The realm that is not a thing is your true vision. Do you remember about the bird path? You won't meet a single person. You won't meet a single thing. Here's Hakuin saying, the realm that is not a thing is your true vision. True vision is your essential nature. In the onflowing of your true vision, of your awareness, there is a sort of traveling gap, a gap that is always now, 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 now. And in that gap, there is not a single thing. There is nothing that you have thingified. Feel for it. This experience before anything has been thingified. What is that like? Always, here. Always here. Here is made of, here is the realm of not yet thingified. It reminds me a little of the koan where someone asks the master, his master, what's under your robe? And the teacher says, intimate. Intimate. Here, as intimate as your own flesh, you don't need to see it. It's here. I think I might bring in a couple more things and then open up the conversation. Maybe I'll bring in that the words of the pointer that is presented before the main case. The pointer starts like this. I just love these so much. They're so delicious. The pointer says, the unvoiced statement is not transmitted by 1,000 sages. The thread before our eyes is ever unbroken. The thread before our eyes is ever unbroken, clean and naked, bare and untrammeled. The bare field, the blessings, right? Clean and naked, bare and untrammeled. The white ox on open ground. Eyes alert, ears alert, the golden-haired lion. Leaving this aside for the moment, tell me, what is the white ox on open ground? The white ox on open ground is similar to images that you might be more familiar with, the white heron in the mist, snow in a silver bowl. And Hakuin further says, prior to activation of the intellect, yet clear before the eyes, the actual experience of hearing the sound of one hand is where you lose your head and your life. The thread means a little bit. On returning to life, it becomes this little bit. Ever unbroken, from before the creation until after the end of the world, it is completely airtight. There is never a gap. All the way down to the bottom of hell. The golden-haired lion, he says, refers to Manjushri, but it's just eyes alert, ears alert. That's the golden-haired lion. That's the essence of Manjushri. So what does all that have to do with this koan? This question. Now, just to make life a little bit, if it's not complicated enough yet, here's the other translation that goes like this. When I don't see, why don't you see my not seeing? If you see not seeing, that is naturally not characteristic of not seeing. If you don't see my not seeing, naturally is not a thing. How could it not be you? So the con kind of spirals down to this final question. Why? How could it not be you? So this can you know, it could take us in kind of a philosophical direction, but I don't think it has to. I think it's really about what is your actual experience and why does it matter? So I'm gonna turn lights on. We're all easily on one screen, so just speak when you are ready.